Good afternoon. This is a recording of session 28, notes from Brownfield Job Training Professional Learning Community. This is the third cycle of our series of Brownfield's job training conference calls. Each call is 30 minutes in length. We talk every other Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. We limit our calls to 30 minutes. You're invited to bring your guests and friends in on the conference call. If you would like to be a regular and receive session notes and reminders of the next meeting, send your email with contact information to msenew@aol.com. That's msenew@aol.com. And we'll put you on our reminder list. If you wish to be removed, you could do the same thing, and we'll take your name off the list. Currently, we have about 100 people who come and go from the bi-weekly conference calls. The purpose of the calls are to discuss a topic each session for 30 minutes. Most of the topics will, on this cycle, have to do with the ranking criteria for the upcoming EPA job development and training funding announcements that come out in October with a due date in January. This request for for assistance, RFA, or request for assistance, will be awarded to 10 to 12 participants, and will last for 2 years. Many of the people on the conference calls have been awarded grants, some for several years, and some have just been awarded grants. And also other people on the conference call are contemplating writing a grant, and some are just interested in what job training in Brownfields is all about. So we have a diversity of participants in these conference calls every other week, and it's great because the mentors or the experienced grantees can tell those of us who may not have as much experience some of the problems they had, what they've done to make their program better, how they climbed the learning curve, some do's and don'ts, what works, what doesn't. And it really helps actually other grantees who may or may not have tried certain techniques, and also people who are just formulating their program and trying to decide which way to go. This first of our sessions, we call it session 28, but it's really the first in cycle 3, is basically a general introduction conference call. Due to technical difficulties, the call wasn't recorded. We usually record each call live. We weren't able to do this on this session. This session took place on September 15th, and it was a general introduction to the Brownfield Professional Learning Community calls. And we were fortunate to have Tim Bull from St. Louis Community College talk to us about his program and some of the aspects of the St. Louis program. Give you a little background. St. Louis Community College was a 2009 stimulus Recovery Act grantee. They received about $500,000, which is a little different than the annual grantees awarded. Basically the same program. This just happened to be an extra grant that was awarded under the Stimulus Act and to St. Louis Community College. They have a history of doing some great work in St. Louis. Their original grant under Brownfield's job training was in 2000, and they had another one in 2004. St. Louis is a particularly hard-hit urban area. Tim's program targets area within the designated St. Louis Regional Empowerment Zone, about 38,000 people who live there. They've suffered for years a lack of financial and social investment. Almost half of the residents in his area are below the poverty level, and the unemployment rate's over 24%. They have many abandoned homes, warehouses, and factories, and commercial buildings in that area. A little bit about those buildings, so most of them are old. They predate 1978 when lead paint was used predominantly as an additive, lead in paint for durability. They have over 100 brownfields efforts in this area. So it certainly is an area that with a lot of remediation activity, potential for redevelopment activity, even in a very difficult economy, and also communities that can really use assistance in learning remediation skills and putting those skills into green jobs, good jobs in the community. So Tim told us a little bit about his program, and we asked him to describe it in general and what he does. And the first question I would say was, well, what is your core curriculum, or what are your primary certification offerings? And this might give everyone an idea of what your program's about. And Tim's response with, of course, the OSHA 40-hour Hazardous Waste Site and Emergency Response Program called HAZWOPER. This is a program that all Brownfields job training programs need as part of their grant. The Federal Code of Regulations, 29 CFR 1910-120, basically spell out the requirements for HAZWOPER training. When we note these references, 29 CFR 1910 or 172, 29 CFR is the EPA OSHA, the Environmental Health and Safety Regs. 1910-120 speaks to worker protection. These are spelled out. If you would go to the Code of Federal Regulations and look those up, you would see the very specific text in terms of what should be in this training program. In addition, OSHA 40-hour, which is HAZWOPER, they also provide the OSHA 10-hour construction program. That's spelled out in 49 CFR 172.704. This is an OSHA course, Occupational Safety and Health Administration course. You're going to hear acronyms OSHA and EPA, different acronyms. Of course, OSHA under the Department of Labor, Health and Safety of Workers. The 10-hour construction course is for those who are working around construction, whether it's construction or deconstruction, which is very integral to environmental remediation, the kind of overlap. Certainly the remediation is about the cleanup, but you're involved in construction activities as part of that cleanup often, particularly in an area like St. Louis where you've got a lot of abandoned homes and industrial facilities. The third certification and area of training that they provide is the EPA, we call it RRMP, Renovation, Repair, and Painting Regulation. This is a fairly new regulation that was promulgated in April of 2010. Its enforcement has been delayed to this fall for various reasons. It requires that if you're working in a building that has the potential for lead paint pre-1978 in it, you need to have certified supervisor on board. Some brownfields are training many people to have other a worker is trained with this certification. The specifics of the RMP regulation are in 40 CFR 745.85, if you want to look that up and look at it specifically. You could also go to the EPA website, and it'll bring you to RMP and tell you all about it and how to apply it with it. Probably the biggest issue with RRMP, one issue is that EPA in their preliminary announcements for all brownfields are going to require that RRMP be offered. I think the converse to that is, or the argument that some people have with that is that there is a small number of people as of yet who are certified trainers in RRMP. And so you may find a little bit of difficulty finding a RMP certified trainer in your community. That is in your more urban areas more likely to find people available. You can find a list of certified trainers at the EPA site, and you can also apply to become a certified trainer, as some of our brownfields grantees have done. So you could not only hire consultants or trainers to train your people, but you could also become a certified trainer and train other people. RMP kind of grew out of the old lead worker training programs, which are still in place. St. Louis also offers a lead worker safety training program. In some way, it's linking into the RMP. The old lead worker program is more general in terms of not renovation and repair necessarily, but in protecting workers from lead exposure. And in, it also includes the working around facility with lead paint. The other thing that's offered at St. Louis is the EPA asbestos certification. It's 40 CFR Part 763. And that spells out the asbestos health and safety, the remediation and health and safety aspects of asbestos removal. You'll notice I've talked to some of these as OSHA regulations and some as EPA regulations. The EPA renovation repair, the EPA asbestos, EPA lead worker. They were the ones that originated these regulations for training and certification. OSHA promulgated the other ones, Haswapper 10-hour construction. Those are OSHA courses, and there's many, many OSHA certifications and courses. Confined space, ladders, just electrical, quite a few. And later on in another conference call, we'll talk about all of the OSHA certifications and potential areas of training that one might get into depending on your program. The other area that St. Louis trains and certifies people in is in weatherization. And with the new emphasis on green jobs, of course, we all know that EPA has been working with green jobs since 1987 or so. They are well entrenched in green jobs, particularly in the area of assessment, remediation. In other words, finding out the pollutants and cleaning them up. They've been at the forefront in that. As we expand the scope of green jobs, we start bringing in energy efficiency and how that applies to environment is clearly the linkage that if you have a more efficient building, you're using less electricity, you're basically conserving, you're burning less coal to produce electricity, burning less oil, and you've got a much more efficient system. So weatherization has crept into the brownfield mix of potential or possible areas of study. It perhaps is not the leading area of study. We like to focus on remediation and assessment, the pure environmental courses. But we find that there's a lot of activity going on in brownfields. If you're going to tear down old buildings, and particularly if you're going to rebuild new buildings, you might as well make them energy efficient, to use less energy, to conserve energy, to burn less fuel to generate power for those facilities, and result less pollution, quite a bit less perhaps. If you double your efficiency, you've halved the amount of, say, coal that you'd be burning to generate electricity to energize those facilities. So that's the rationale. And there is a lot of work in weatherization, whether we're talking about, again, assessment, determining what are the leakage potentials in a facility, the insulation, making it energy efficient, and the inspection and certification of those facilities, make sure the work is done properly. So most of the brownfields weatherization programs focus on the installers and installation of insulation in a facility. Unlike the other certifications I mentioned, federal government hasn't yet proposed standards for training and certification in this area. Certifications, of course, are pretty much in the eyes of the users or beholders of those products. If everyone accepts a certain certification, that kind of de facto becomes the certification that everyone accepts, and those are the standards that are used. And we'll talk about certifications in another conference call, but basically weatherization has been proposed a certification and training standard by BPI. There have been others that have been proposed by HUD in the planning stages in different areas. Some building professional, they haven't focused so much on, they've established certifications for professionals, building envelopes, HVAC systems, more the engineer, professional weatherization person. Our target groups tend to be more in the installer area, where there haven't been quite these standards. Now, as I mentioned, BPI is a nonprofit association developing the standard rather than the federal government. So this is a little bit different. HUD in some areas and ASTM, American Society of Testing Materials, will probably come out with standards to the extent that we come up with a national training standard and national certification. That's in, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Right now, whether it's St. Louis or Kansas City, people are developing courses based on a certain set of standards, and they're issuing the certifications based on those standards that our students are getting. This level of education, they're going to have these skills and knowledges, and they're certified to do this type of work. And that becomes their certification. So this is a little bit different than these other certs that have federally mandated standards and items that a person must do to complete to get that certification. These certifications are basically generated by the provider of that certification and backed up by the training plan and the curriculum. So, but these are the core courses and certifications offered in St. Louis. And one of the things we asked Tim is why these courses? And Tim provided actually the excellent answer that one would expect. He said it's based on our needs assessment, our labor market assessment. And this is key. If you are developing a brownfields job development training program, or if you have a program and you're planning on revising that program, you really need to back it up with some sort of a needs assessment. And often people think of needs assessment as just a survey sent out to a bunch of employers, who do you plan on hiring? that's not necessarily a needs assessment. And we're going to save that for another conference call, but we'll be talking about needs assessments. But they are of vital importance in developing your training plan and then any certifications you're going to provide your participants. In Tim's case, he did a needs assessment in St. Louis. They've got many pre-1978 buildings, lots of lead, lots of asbestos, lots of construction and deconstruction that will be going on. So all of these things lead to his exact curriculum. When his students go through his program, they will be prepared to undertake the jobs that St. Louis is moving into. And there is some massive redevelopment that's potentially getting ready to start. They're waiting for additional tax incentives, but once they get going, they're going to construct a city within the city. There will be tremendous amount of deconstruction, remodeling, and reconstruction, and all of those will involve. Some will involve OSHA 40-hour hazardous weights. Some will, many of them will be involving construction with the OSHA 10-hour construction certification. Many will have RRMP associated with it. Some will have asbestos, and there may be some instances of weatherization and other lead issues. So Tim has positioned his program very, very well. One of the last things that Tim talked to our group about was the idea of recruitment and placement. And again, this is an issue we're going to talk about in another session. But as Tim had mentioned, there are many people that want to get into this program. It's got a very good reputation. He might have 75 to 100 applicants for a program. He will narrow that down to 15. So it's an incredible culling of people. We wish we could train more, and if we could, we would. Due to fiscal constraints, many of the programs and the size of the programs were limited to 15, 20 people in a training cycle. Many people want to undergo this training, and they're all deserved. All of them qualify and are deserving people. So how do you get from 100 to 15? And what you have to look at is if everyone is equally deserving, you have to find out who will finish the program. If someone drops out because they just think it's too hard, they've deprived someone else of a seat in that program, an opportunity to finish a program. It's extremely important to find the people in the program, in the applicant pool, who you feel will have the strength and fortuitousness and the desire to finish this program. And when they finish this program, will have the desire to work in the field that you're training them. If you were to just take everybody and half feels too hard, the other half may not be interested in this area, your dropout rate becomes high. Your retention rate is high, your placement rate is low, and the program slowly starts to deteriorate. Not only that, is the better quality of graduating class that you have, the easier it will be to place those students. And the easier to place the students that are really qualified, they will do well on the job. It'll give your program a very good reputation, which in turn will make future recruitment of high-quality participants even easier. So it all links together. If you recruit and accept high-quality participants, all well-deserving, into the program, we're going to finish the program and do well. When they finish, they will get good jobs. They will do well on the jobs. The employers will be happy with their work, and they will come to you for more graduates. Having known that your program produces good people that are well-deserving, and do well on the job, more people like that will come to your program and say, this is the program I want to join. So your pool of applicants will even get better as you go, and your placement rate will be easier because your placement activity will be easier because your employers will know that you're only letting the best through. They're getting well trained and they're doing well, and the history of their job performance is excellent. So it's a very difficult thing, but it's so important that you recruit well and you screen well. And Tim mentioned to us, he's talking one-on-one personally to at least three times to each applicant, three interviews, three times talking to these people to make sure they are going to finish the program and be successful. The other thing is you want them to be successful. You do not want to recruit people who are not going to do well in the program because they won't like it. They'll drop out, and they won't make good employees once they get out. In a perfect world, if we could take everyone who deserves it and run everyone through the program and place everyone, it'd be wonderful. But again, we've got 15 seats, and we've got many people who deserve it, and they all deserve it. But we have to take the best 15, and we have to make sure that we're not going to have seats vacated as we go, depriving someone who is capable and desirous and wants to do a good job, and depriving them of a seat they could have had if we only had a better recruitment process. So this is what they're doing in St. Louis, and in my opinion, they're certainly doing everything right, and it's a great program, and more power to them. In the post-session notes, and if you want to contact Tim, you can just go to the EPA site and look up his information, or you can his fact sheet, or you could email me for his contact information if you'd like, and he certainly said he'd be happy to talk to anyone who would like to talk to him about their program. That was pretty much where we went on this very first session. And our next professional learning community, PLC meeting, will be in 2 weeks, again on Wednesday, September 29th, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Just call this number, and if you know anyone who would like to join in, have them email me, msenyu@aol.com, their contact information, and we'll get them on the list, and look forward to talking to you all in 2 weeks. Have a great day, and talk to you later. Bye.